Yeah, so it's so full of garbage that it's really hard to describe it without somebody saying, no, he's pulling our leg. Dead for 5 years. He met two clinical prediction rules. He centralized. He had low fear avoidance. And then he had multiple subluxations. I mean, we made up all this baloney. He had a oswestry of 100, timed up and go of infinite time because he couldn't get out of the chair. He was unresponsive during the patient history. Silliness throughout the whole thing. We decided that a manipulation, only one manipulation was needed, but it would need to be repeated 250 times, which is ridiculous. At manipulation 176, he started to see major changes in his self-reported disability, quality of life, and then he came back to life.
That is Chad Cook, Duke University Physical Therapy Chair, talking about a paper that he and two other PTs submitted for publication on purpose with a predatory journal. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Chad will be having a presentation at CSM this year in Washington, D.C., talking about the dark side of PubMed and highlighting the dangers of predatory journals on the profession of physical therapy. We get into more of that in this episode, brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for a certification on personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it. Johnny Owens, the guys have this thing covered, and their own podcast now on iTunes called the Owens Recovery Science Podcast. Find out more information about Johnny and getting certified in BFR at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world.
It is.
This is the PT Pintcast.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. I want to let you know we are on social media at PT Pintcast. That's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And as always, if you want to leave an honest review on iTunes or on Spotify or Google Podcasts, we appreciate that too. Bringing back no stranger to the show and a member of an elite club, the top 12 of 2018 most downloaded episodes from last year, Chad Cook. Dr. Chad Cook, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back. And wow, I'm honored. I didn't know I was one of the top.
It's kind of
fantastic.
Everybody does a top 10 list, right? We do the top 12 because there's 12 ounces in a beer. So we try to keep that. That's why we do the top 12. Appreciate you taking some time out. Last time we had you on the show, we were talking about your MedBridge course and really making sure clinicians practicing could still navigate evidence-based practice and learn how to do that long after you've left PT programs, and having you back on the show because you're going one step further and you're going to do it live at CSM. Of course, we're going to converge on the nation's capital coming up in just a few weeks, the 23rd, 24th, 25th in January. And you've got a presentation with Lori Mishner of Federico Pozzi and Julie Tilson. The title, The Dark Side of PubMed, Predatory Journals. It makes me think of like the Star Wars. I want to have the Star Wars theme as you guys walk into the room. I'm just throwing it out there. You can use that. It's in the section on research. If people want to check it out, Thursday, January 24th, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. in room 159 A and B. This looks like it'll spark some fun and some research, Chad. Where'd this idea come from?
Well, as you probably know, we're really struggling with a lot of predatory journals. I think we're close to 8,000 to 10,000 is what I've read recently. And it's gotten to the point now where we're really struggling to understand if we're reading real evidence or if it's fake evidence or somewhere in between. It used to be a lot clearer. It is certainly not clear now. And what we want to try to do at CSM is give people an idea how to navigate that quagmire of evidence.
8,000 to 10,000 journals or articles?
Journal.
That's crazy.
I saw a recent figure that showed that 1/3 of all journals now, of all journals, are predatory journals.
I think I know what a predatory journal is, but let's step back and go real macro. How would you describe a predatory journal? What would make something qualify to be labeled as that?
It has no legitimate peer review process. That's the most compelling piece to it. There isn't anybody evaluating the strength of the science at the end of the peer review process. It just doesn't exist. A second piece to that is it goes into a dark hole, an abyss. And if it's good information, it never actually gets out to the public. They put it on their website. It's impossible to find. It rarely gets on PubMed. PubMed used to be a nice way to discriminate between quality work and not, but not anymore. Those are two ways to really understand it straight off the bat.
What's the reason for their existence, you know, with a third of all journals? That's a lot.
Money.
Yeah.
So if you think of this, an average predatory journal only charges about $400 per publication. And you wouldn't think that's very much. But if you look at where these are actually housed from Nigeria, India, and let's say they publish any particular journal, 30 papers a year. They don't make a lot of money, a little over $12,000, but that's actually more than the average individual makes. And if you pump out 800 titles or 800 journals within a particular company, then there's actually big money in predatory publishing.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense, the economics of it. Why are individuals submitting to predatory journals? Do they not know, or do they need to get something published?
It's all of the reason. For starters, there are a lot of people who actually don't know. And it isn't just junior faculty or new researchers that get duped into this. It's actually seasoned researchers, because sometimes it's really difficult to determine if it's a predatory journal or not. The sounds of the titles of the journals sound similar to others. That's one of the reasons people get duped. Other people absolutely know, and they still publish in them anyway, because they don't want to go through the strict route of a legitimate journal. That's a real problem, because it's starting to affect academics, promotion and tenure, and also source amnesia bias, which you have a difficult time sorting information that you've heard in the past, whether it was real or not.
That term that was really, really all over the place in 2018, that fake news, now we're starting to get fake research.
Yeah, and having lived one recently, and we talked about this, that we were playing around with it. I wanted to see how easy it was to actually publish in a predatory journal. So my colleagues, Josh Cleland, Paul Mitkin, and I wrote a fake paper about bringing somebody back from death. They'd been dead for 5 years. We did repeated manipulations. The paper was so full of errors and silliness, but it was published.
So hold on. Let's rewind. I want to go to the back to this story, because this is one that's going to be told in the hallways at CSM for a long time. What made you guys, were you sitting around? Hopefully a beer or a drink was involved when you said, hey, you know what we should do? And which is the beginning of anything. Hopefully one of you said, hey, hang on, hold my beer, and started typing. But how did this thing come about when you said, let's see what ridiculous stuff we can actually get published?
Well, it was crazy Josh Cleland's idea. He's a master at generating crazy ideas, but actually not following through on these. So Paul and I were dumb enough to agree to do it with him.
I love this story. I want you to stick around and hear all the landmines that Chad, Josh, and Paul put in this paper and then wound up getting it published in the predatory journal. Just wait till you hear the ridiculous stuff they included in the patient description and what they were doing and then what happened. It came back to life. Can't say thanks enough to our sponsors at Aureus Medical Group. They are the leaders in travel physical therapy staffing. Quite simply, they find physical therapists' jobs. Do what you want to do, where you want to do it. I'm talking about placements in all 50 states. Just take a look. Get on a phone call with one of their recruiters. Yeah, Aureus is the expert in travel physical therapy. AureusMedical.com. That's Aureus Medical Group. AureusMedical.com. Our home on the internet.
PTPintcast.com.
Created by BuildPT. BuildPT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what BuildPT can do for you today
at BuildPT.com.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
Were you sitting around? Hopefully a beer or a drink was involved when you said, hey, you know what we should do? And which is the beginning of anything. Hopefully one of you said, hey, hang on, hold my beer, and started typing. But how did this thing come about when you said, let's see what ridiculous stuff we can actually get published?
Well, it was crazy Josh Cleland's idea. He's a master at generating crazy ideas, but actually not following through on these. So Paul and I were dumb enough to agree to do it with him. So you get these emails overnight, because they come from usually Africa and the Middle East and India. And you wake up and in your email box, you have 30 to 40 requests to submit a paper. Josh publishes a lot. He has well over 200 legitimate publications. So he gets about 30 to 40 of these a day. So he contacted Paul and I by email and said, hey, I'm so sick of this. Let's write a crazy paper. And I had a gap in my schedule, so I started writing. I sent it to those guys. They added their beautiful remarks to it. And we submitted it to the first request we had, and it was published. So Crazy Josh is the impetus behind this.
So give people the nuts and bolts. What did the patient look like? Dead for 5 years, repeated spinal manipulations, and then poof. Like, how would you describe it if you were going to present this as a legitimate paper?
Yeah, so it's so full of garbage that it's really hard to describe it without somebody saying, no, he's pulling our leg. Dead for 5 years. He met 2 clinical prediction rules. He centralized. He had low fear avoidance. He had multiple subluxations. I mean, we made up all this baloney. He had an oswestry of 100, timed up and go of infinite time because he couldn't get out of the chair. He was unresponsive during the patient history. Silliness throughout the whole thing.
We decided
that a manipulation, only one manipulation was needed, but it would need to be repeated 250 times, which is ridiculous. At manipulation 176, he started to see major changes in his self-reported disability and quality of life, and then he came back to life.
Oh, man. I got to wipe my eyes right now. I'm tearing up a little bit. I mean, it's just you riddled it with landmines. Anybody who knew any of these words would say this is – I mean, it wasn't just one thing or a piece of data or a data set. This thing was stacked.
Completely stacked, and so stacked, we had a lawyer look at it to make sure that we weren't going to get in trouble. The lawyer wrote back to us and said, this is the funniest thing I've ever read. The lawyer sorted it out. He said, there's no way that this should have ever been accepted. Wow. We let it ride.
So, boom, you guys get the email. You put together your landmine-ridden paper. Patient survives. Fantastic. How long did it go from writing to submission to publication?
Less than 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, we sent an email because the first thing they did is once they received the manuscript submission by email, by the way, they said, we're going to need you to agree to pay $440. I wrote back and said, no, I don't agree to pay that. Didn't hear from them. And the next thing I know, it was a complete copy edited final accepted publication that they sent to me. They've never requested the money again. I even emailed them as a courtesy and said, hey, it was a fake paper. You probably want to pull it off your website. Nope. They offered me an editorial position after I sent them that email.
You got a job offer.
Yes.
Wow. Even better. So, you know, would love to break some news here. Are you going to be taking the position with that journal?
No, I politely declined. I think my standards are a little too strict for that journal.
What was the name of the journal? Just because now I'm curious.
It was the Archives of Women's Health. Or something like that. And that's another thing. Our patient was male, had nothing to do with the focus of the journal. They were just looking for anything.
But now they're starting to use words that, as you mentioned earlier, which are difficult to sort out. You know, the archives of, you know, archives right there. It sounds like it's legitimate.
True. And what they do is they target big name journals and they tweak the words a little bit so that an unassuming individual will think that they're actually dealing with that particular journal.
And when we start going out for just pure math, as you mentioned, most of these things are in, you know, lower income areas, and email costs nothing. So if you send out 1,000 emails, you've likely copied and pasted an ask request, and you're sitting there for a couple hours. You know, it's hard to blame the telemarketers when people are still ordering stuff when they pick up the phone. So that's where we come back to full circle, the dark side of PubMed and predatory journals. This talk that you're going to be giving at CSM Thursday, January 24th, 8 a.m. And that's going to be in room 159 A and B. You're going to be there with Lori Mishner, Federico Posey, and Julie Tilson. Let us know what we can learn there. What are we going to walk out of there knowing how to do?
Well, you know, you can get a blacklist, and this is what Jeffrey Beal's list used to be, and that would be a list of all the journals and all of the predatory journals. And we've really strayed away from that because they're proliferating so quickly that it's almost impossible to stay on top of that. So we will be talking about whitelisting. What do you look for in a proper journal? That's certainly one of the things. I'm going to talk about how it's impacted academia and how sleazy academicians are actually using predatory publishing to pad their CVs to get promoted and to get tenure. And a lot of universities are really struggling with this, especially smaller universities that really require a lot of teaching from their faculty. I guess the faculty feel that this is their only way of going. We're going to talk a lot about the history of predatory publishing. We'll talk a little bit about some of the stings that have happened, including our particular sting that we did for fun, but has really done a nice job of pointing out how easy it is to publish in this particular area. And we'll talk a little bit about fake news or source amnesia and how over time, what you read in a legitimate journal and what you read in a lousy journal tends to have the same level of credence. So that's a problem.
We're trying to say our profession is evidence-based, and with the proliferation of predatory journals and hashtag fake research, it's going to undermine what the thing that we're trying to build. And unfortunately, it is difficult, and for good reason, to produce quality research. And when it's out there, you want to be able to find it. It looks like on a lot of different sides of the coin, academics, publishing, people being duped into it or using it on purpose, maliciously. It looks like this is a giant problem. As you mentioned, only getting bigger. I am astounded by the number 8,000 to 10,000. But as you mentioned, they're easy to create because they're made of air.
It's easy to get a DOI number and pretend you have a journal. It's astounding. Just 4 or 5 years ago, it was 600.
Wow.
And it's grown that quickly. Huge problem.
Anything else that you're looking forward to CSM? How do you pick what you go and you spend your time on in terms of presentations? What do you look for? How do you pick?
So like you, I mostly do networking. And you end up with so many people you're scheduled to meet. It's the perfect time to do that because everybody is there. I like to target courses that it's a rare chance to actually see somebody speak. So whether that's an overseas person that comes in, or maybe it's a topic that I don't normally see. And then I show up about 45 minutes before it actually starts to make sure that I can get in.
That is a good hint, because if you think it's interesting, chances are with, you know, last CSM in New Orleans, 17,000 plus, some of those rooms can get big and they can get overflowed. And if there's something that you really want to see, and we suggest this often, get there early, as you just mentioned. And yeah, my first couple of CSMs, when I was trying to do interviews out there, I'd reach out to people and they'd give me these windows of time that were super small. And I thought I was getting blown off. And then you go to two CSMs and you realize it might be a couple days, but there are very few opportunities to actually do stuff because there are so many people there and you want to be able to say hi in person.
Agreed. And the evening functions too are as strong as the day functions. There's very little sleep.
Yep.
In that 3-4 day period.
I say CSM's 4 days are the longest 8 days of my life because you need a vacation when you get back from it. It feels like it's a weekend of Vegas, right? If you're in a room or in the expo hall, no windows, no clocks. It feels like it's always daytime. I'm assuming the APTA, I cannot confirm or deny that they're pumping oxygen into the room to keep us awake. I don't know. It could be.
That's good.
So again, the dark side of PubMed, predatory journals, is going to be Thursday, January 24th, 8 to 10 with Chad Cook, Lori Mishner, Frederico Posey, and Julie Tilson. That's going to be in 159 AMB. I will say download the APTA app because sometimes rooms change and they will be updated on the app faster than the website. Really looking forward to this. I think this is important and only going to get bigger, as you mentioned, being 600 5 years ago and now we're closing on 10K. This is something that we definitely need to put some effort into to make sure our profession doesn't get eroded. Parting shot. Yeah, that's the last thing we do on the show.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. They're more than just a tape company. They're a movement company. Rock Tape helps athletes of every level go stronger, longer with the best kinesiology tape, cutting edge education, and fitness support products. Rock Tape wants people to move more and move better. Find them online at rocktape.com/medical.
Well, how about we do the antithesis of a predatory journal? How about the JAMA series? You may have seen our opioid paper that came out. Again, it suggests that early access to PT, exposure, just exposure, it doesn't even mean good care, but just care by a PT actually decreases downstream use of opioids. And that paper just came out on Friday in JAMA Open. Hope everybody gets a chance to read that. We're starting to see enough information to suggest that early access to PT really, it changes that healthcare utilization process in a good way.
Last question. Zion Williams, can he in fact jump over the backboard? It looks like he can clear the backboard.
You probably saw him hit his head on the backboard.
It's insane.
I can't believe the guy. He is a big, big man.
He's a linebacker.
I had a chance to see him. He is. I saw them play Eastern Michigan, so I saw him in person. He's a beast. I know he's only here for 1 year, but we're sure glad we got him.
Yeah. Looking forward to seeing some more of that. Good luck in the dance with Zion. He's a big dance partner to have on your team. Dr. Chad Cook from Duke University, looking forward to seeing you at CSM. Thanks for taking some time out to talk with us.
Hey, thanks again for all of what you do and giving us a voice.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
All right, show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, six PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org.